Hey guys, welcome back to the Steep Stuff Podcast. I'm your host, James Lariello, and today we got a really fun one. My good buddy, Evan Paul. This is a really fun one and super informative. Evan serves as, actually, he's the former vice president of South Chaffee County Search and Rescue, but he's still extremely active in SAR. We also dive into Evan's background, his past, some of his competitive snowboarding days, and then all the things he likes to do in the backcountry. This is meant to be a super informative episode. Evan gets into a lot of stuff regarding search and rescue, not just crazy stories, but also some of the really important gear you guys should be bringing along with you in the backcountry, as well as just awareness and trying to gain some awareness for search and rescue. So without further ado, buckle up, my buddy Evan Paul.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are live.
Yeah, dude. So, dude, what did you think of the incline today?
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I had a good time with that.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. I was pretty, I was in the pain cave a little bit though. I was hurting.
Really?
Yeah. Towards the end, I shouldn't say like that steep section just fucked me up. It's so... I don't know. Like, no matter how many times I do that thing, like, there's just no easy part to it. Like, it never gets easier.
Doesn't, but you hide it well. Here I was suffering looking at you. I'm like, damn it.
I was really, no offense to you, but I was really happy you slowed down a little bit in that section. I was like, thank God. I was like, thank you, dude.
Oh, man. All right.
I was like, really, really happy. And then, you know, it's like, it's kind of funny because once you, once you top out a little bit and, you know, you kind of like, there's that like moderate section before it starts gaining again. And that's kind of where I cramp.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And good thing I remembered that there was that kind of fall summit there.
Oh yeah.
Because without that, if you're going up there for the first time,
demoralizing. Totally.
Absolutely.
ladies and gentlemen, we are, actually I shouldn't say ladies and gentlemen. Evan, we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm live with Evan Paul. Dude, I've been wanting to have you on for a long time. So I'm so excited. We finally, took the time to get together and, I'll give you an opportunity to kind of introduce yourself and we can kind of go from there.
All right. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Yeah. Love hanging out with you. So
yeah, dude.
This is cool.
It's my pleasure. Welcome to the Steep Stuff Podcast.
Well, thank you. Evan Paul from Salida, Colorado. Originally from the East Coast and moved out here way too late. Should have done it years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what, let's unpack that a little bit. Let's, when did you move out here? What year?
I think it was end of 2016 into 2017.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you moved to Colorado Springs, like they were Colorado Springs, Manitou area?
I moved to Colorado Springs, had a couple of friends out here. It was a great opportunity. They said, hang with us for a little while, figure out what you want to do. So did that and kind of figured I was going to be on the road to Summit County. That was kind of calling my name as far as the outdoors and snowboarding.
Yeah.
And while I was in Colorado Springs, a couple of people said, go look at Salida. Did. I was like, I don't get it. There's nothing here. I just stayed on Highway 50. I never made it downtown.
You didn't go downtown?
No. So, that didn't work out. And then went back there and I'm like, okay, this is it.
Makes sense. Yeah. Dude, what a cool town on the Arkansas and just now it's booming. You know, we kind of got into that conversation a little bit earlier at lunch, but like, and we can dive deeper into that, you know, as we go, but that town has changed a lot in the last 5 years. Big time.
Absolutely. I mean, it's growing and, you know, people get it. They realize, okay, there's priorities in life.
Yeah.
And outdoors is a big one for a lot of people. And I think they're moving there just for that.
I feel like it's one of the few places, I don't know, outside of, you know, we've talked about Durango, we've talked about some other towns, but it is one of the few places where like It really is. If you're into mountain sports, it doesn't matter what it is, whether you're a skier, whether you're a runner, dude, you could be a fly fisherman and it's like, and it's for you, a kayaker, like everything is, in that Arkansas River Valley, not to put the hard sell on and bring more people there, but I do feel like it is a very cool town.
It's funny you say that without putting a hard sell on there. I had read this article about reasons not to move to Salida from a mountain biker, and everything about it was perfect. Yeah. It was like, okay, moving here, that helped.
That's funny. Yeah. No, and let me ask you a question. I was just in, I follow Salida Mount, I think it's Salida Trails or whatever on Instagram. And just like Durango, I feel like, do they do seasonal like trail closures there? Is that like a big thing as well?
Yeah, seasonal trail closures, animal migration. So it's kind of a big deal. And right now we also have still some snow up high.
Yeah.
So they're cautious about keeping the trails in good condition.
That's cool.
So they'll stay closed a little longer than normal. But yeah, they try and keep bikers, runners, hikers, everyone off the trails during those closures.
No, it's good that they do that. Like I said, that was the first time I'd really come into contact with that was like last weekend in Durango. And I was like, we were running like Twin Buttes area. My girlfriend was, or my fiance was like, what the fuck? The trails are closed. I was like, yeah, I don't know. This is new. Yeah. Cause in Manitou, it's kind of a free for all here in the Springs. Like we just, nobody fucking cares,
which is
good and bad, mostly bad. Okay, so let's turn this back on you a little bit. So you're residing in Salida. Dude, I want to dive into your story. I'd say right now, and one of the big reasons I wanted to have you on, obviously you have an amazing story to tell, but I think your background is very unique. Can you talk a little bit about search and rescue and what you do with SAR?
Sure. I was so search and rescue for Chaffee County South. Our county is actually split up into a north and a south end. That sometimes stirs a little controversy. For Chaffee County South, I was the vice president. I just hit my term limit, so I'm no longer VP, but I still run our technical rope rescue team and our winter rescue team.
Wow.
And it's just a passion. It's something I love doing.
It looks so much fun. Like I see your videos on Instagram, you like in helicopters and shit and like flying around. I'm like, what is this guy doing?
I'm not going to lie. The training is a lot of fun. You know, it's, there's a lot to it that I think as rescuers, we also enjoy for ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of have to be able to be better at what we do.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a difficult job. I mean, for everything from just the technicality, I feel like, having to be competent, in so many different things. But also, you know, kind of the stuff you take home with you from what you'd see on rescues, I would imagine, is probably pretty difficult as well, right? You know,
it can be. We have a great resilience kind of system built internal to the team. We have external resources as well. And technically, we work under the sheriff, so also through the sheriff's department. But that being said, I've noticed just within myself, as long as I've been on SAR, I've kind of dialed things back a little bit just from what I've seen over time.
Yeah.
You know, adds a little caution to my life that wasn't there previously.
Yeah.
Learning to compartmentalize a couple of things is really good. But at the same time, you know, we're always able to talk to each other. We're always checking in with each other, especially when on some of the tougher missions, a recovery or just a really rough mission, we're always there for each other. It's a true team.
Super cool, dude. I love it. And there's so much to unpack here. Like there's so much I really want to dive into. Let's start with like how you got into it. And then we can kind of go into more of the technical aspect of it, like the different, like pieces of SAR, like what you do with rescues and things like that. But like, let's start from the beginning first of how you got into it and then kind of go from there.
Sure. Shortly after moving to Salida, really started hitting the backcountry more and wanting to go play in winter, and was out with some friends who were on a different team, and they were talking about it, and everything about it just sounded so intriguing. It was like these new skills I could learn, just the group of people all kind of like-minded. And giving back. I mean, that's of course the huge one.
Yeah.
It all just sounded great. And then during that same day, 3 out of 4 of us got caught in an avalanche.
Really?
Yeah. No one got injured. You know, we were all partial burials, just some lost equipment that got recovered in the summer. But I think it was at that moment where it just kind of sunk in that Yeah, I want to be able to help others. I mean, if this had been worse, we would have had SAR out there. And, you know, I want to be that guy to help others. I want to learn new skills. I want to do what I can to make sure someone else is not in a position that's worse than where I am right now.
Holy shit, dude. I had no idea you were caught in an avalanche. Like, that's kind of wild.
Yeah.
Is that only one, or have you been in others? Or
only been in one.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. Knock on wood. Yeah. Hopefully only going to be in one.
Yeah.
You know, I have set off a couple of small slides here and there. Luckily, no one around. And it was all kind of around the same time. So that was, I guess, my time for being dumb.
Yeah.
But yeah,
not
since. Yes.
That's crazy, dude. Okay. So I'm trying to like maybe visualize this, and for like the listener as well. I'm, you know, for the person that's maybe interested in joining SAR or trying to do something like that, like, what is the process like? So you were inspired to go do this. What was the process like for you when, like, from sign up to the training and things like that? I guess we can break it down that way.
Well, each team does it a little bit different. The way the team that I'm on does it is basically you sign up. There's an open application time window. Come to a couple of meetings, kind of sit in, see what's going on, check out some trainings. Then you've got to do a background check. You'll get voted in. Also, you fill out an application talking about your skills. Once you're voted in, then you have to do some training. It's called NIMS for, it's a National Incident Management System, where we kind of all are able to work together with teams as well as with FEMA and other organizations. Have to have, for our team, first aid, CPR. You can have higher medical skills, but really not required. And then from there, it's kind of more individual. You'll have a mentor that's going to work with you on figuring out your pack, figuring out where your skills lie and how to improve them, and just going over everything that you'll be doing on the team. There's a lot of things where we all work together as a team, and then there's also some specialist areas. So there's a lot that, you know, we want to all train together on, and then we'll have training on top of that for more of the specialty areas.
Okay. And like what, sorry to continue on, but like, what kind of specialty areas are there? Because I like, what's the one with the helicopter? That's fucking cool.
So I guess almost anyone on the team can use a helicopter. Some of the videos I guess you saw that I was doing was step training.
Okay.
So there's just a couple of us on our team that were doing step. And what that is basically extraction into the, or I guess unloading out of the helicopter and entering into the helicopter without it landing. So there are three main types on that. We would do a hover. We would do a nose in, where just the tips of the skids were touching the ground at a really crazy angle, or a single skid. So that was a training that required us to be working with them every single month, plus a 3-day training at the beginning of the year, just because you have to have it so dialed.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, you can knock that helicopter out. You can screw things up really fast if you don't. So,
what kind of choppers do they use? Are they like UEs or whatever?
This was a Bell 205. So, older helicopter, but big, powerful thing. And
so cool.
It's perfect.
I just picture, I don't know. Did you ever see that? You might have actually showed it to me. There was a YouTube video of this rescue where these guys were going up the needle on the Ellingwood Arete and the Crestone Needle, and they got kind of stuck up there. They had to call in. I think they like had a military helicopter come in to get them. And I just picture you like hanging from the helicopter, like these guys jumping into your arms. And it's like, sorry, I don't know.
No, you know, that's actually one of the things. It's called a hoist. And that's something that myself and some others really want to get into. But unfortunately, we don't have that ability at the moment. Okay. But yeah, we utilize military helicopters, and it's called HATS. And they'll come in and do a hoist, and yeah, it's
so neat. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, what a, and it's, dude. And first of all, like I know I've thanked you before, but I just can't get enough time like to thank you for like what you do, for like being able to like, for doing this. Cause I think, you know, you're providing, this is a mountain podcast. There's a lot of runners that listen to this. People do dumb shit in the backcountry, and you're a lot of times you're, you know, you're one of the people that helps, rescue us when we overcommit, you know? So no, it's much appreciated, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's still always weird to hear someone say thank you for something that I just love to do. Yeah. So, well, thank you.
So I should preface this too with like the first time we met, through a mutual friend getting up on Mount Yale. And I can remember I think you made fun of me a little bit because I'm I like to go light and fast. Let's put it that way. You know, I'm like a belt guy. And you've got your poles, you've got like this pack with all kinds of shit in there. And I'm like kind of asking you questions about like what you got in the pack. And, you know, you've got like this, you know, kind of a laundry list. And I'm just thinking to myself in the back of my head, like, thank God I've got this guy with me in case I do something really dumb in the mountains.
that seems to be a common theme these days is I'm carrying more and more based on what I've seen out there. Yeah. It's like, even when I want to go fast and light, I'm like, yeah, my fast and light is very different from a lot of other people's fast and light. Just because I've seen so many scenarios where it's like, oh, that one little thing could have made all the difference.
Yeah.
I'm going to add that to my pack all the time.
And I think it's so smart. And it's just so, I think being around you and spending time around you has fundamentally like changed like my risk approach to the mountains in a positive way.
All right. Glad to hear that.
Yeah, dude. Like, and I think this is important to talk about, especially because we have so many, this is a very sub ultra oriented podcast where, the name of the game is to go fast and light in the mountains. And a lot of times in the type of routes that we like to do, they're high consequence.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. So maybe we could dive into that a little bit on, I don't know, maybe just some like pack recommendations or something like that, that like maybe you stuff you would like recommend, maybe not going so light and so fast, you know, just for certain things in the mountains. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's the 10 essentials, which basically everyone should have with them. But one of the big things is, you know, we're out in remote areas, and if anything were to happen, we really need to be able to communicate. Cell phones are great, but you know, we don't have cell service in a lot of the areas that we like to play in. So having something like an InReach, I think, is crucial.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, you've got to pay a subscription and it costs money up front, but, I mean, that's just such a huge thing. It's kind of nice that Apple has added that to their iPhone as an option to be able to get, a satellite service. And we've actually used that on a rescue, but just having a little InReach, they're small, they're light, and throwing that in your pack, that's great.
Yeah.
And then also, if you're in a situation as a runner where you hurt your ankle, or something that's going to slow you down from getting out of there, you need to be able to stay warm. We're in Colorado. I mean, it's going to get cold in the evening. It's just how it is. So even a small, lightweight emergency blanket. You know, I mean, these things aren't going to keep you super warm. You're not going to be extremely comfortable, but if it's enough to keep your body warm enough that you're going to live, that's all it takes.
Yeah. I do. I bring my, you'd be so proud of me. I got a little emergency blanket. I was supposed to pace, a friend at, I think it was High Lonesome. And like one of the things in their pack was like an emergency blanket that you had to bring with you.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Yeah. Like a mandatory pack. And now, you know what, dude, if there is a rare day that I'm going out with a pack, I will actually bring that with me. Cause like, I figure like, you know, 20 miles equals pack, you know, anything less than that, I'm a little iffy on the pack. Mm-hmm. We're getting better though. You'd be proud.
Good. And one other one, which, kind of surprises people is having a light source and not just at night during your daytime runs. I can't tell you how often we've rescued people because we've been able to see their light. So during the day, I mean, even from a helicopter, if they're flying overhead looking for someone and that person can't move, but they're able to flash a light in that direction, that's enough sometimes to have them be found.
Yeah.
So having some sort of light source on you day or night is really, really helpful.
Wow. No, dude, thank you for those insights. I've got one question related to like scheduling. How does the scheduling work? Cause like, you're like James Bond. Sometimes when I'm around you, you're like, oh, duty calls. I got to do the rescue. Like how does that work with the scheduling?
So the way it works is we have an incident command group that actually has to be scheduled because they're the ones that are going to take the call from dispatch, make the plan and organize everyone. So they're on a set schedule where they have to sign up for it and be available. our current IC, we use pagers. So we have to also stay within a limited range.
That is so Navy SEALs right there. Yeah. I just picture like Charlie Sheen with his little,
it's not far off from that. That's the true schedule. But then the rest of the team, we'll get a page through our phone, whether it's email, text. We have multiple ways that we'll get the call coming through and an app as well. And then in there, you can reply with your availability.
Okay.
So it can be on the way. It could be at the bay only if you can't make it into the field, 6 hours, 10 hours, whatever it is. That goes out to the whole team. But within that, sometimes we'll say, all right, this is specific for, we need the drone team. We need technical rescuers. We need snowmobile driver, whatever it is.
Interesting.
It'll start talking about focusing if we need to do that.
Okay. And a lot of times, most of these calls, how does it work? It goes to the dispatch center. So let's say, let's walk through like a fictional one. I'm just kind of curious. So let's say like I'm in the Sun Grays, I fall or I'm cliffed out somewhere. I get on my inReach, right? And I hit my SOS button. Does that go to the sheriff or does that go to you? Who's that go to?
So it doesn't come to us direct. Garmin has their own people that kind of take that and then send it out from there. So then it'll go through dispatch. When I say that is basically 911.
Okay.
So then they will send out a page on those pagers and ask for us to call in, and we'll figure out from there exactly what resources are needed and start figuring out if we know where the location is and who we can talk to. Sometimes we can actually talk to the subjects themselves if they have a phone available. But other times we're just kind of
going in blind. Dude, that's crazy. I want to ask I have so many more like story questions, but I won't out of the, you know, cause like stories kind of open up like a deep, you know, like a deep hole, we can kind of go in a million directions with that. One question I do have about, Chaffee County. Now you said it was broken up, or for your search and rescue was broken up from a north to a south. What, and you're in the south, right? You said,
correct.
And what is the south like encompass? Is that all the way down to the Sun Grays or is that like,
no. So, so our bread and butter is Mount Shamano and everything around there. That's our big one. We used to do a ton of mutual aid down south from us as well. So been on a lot of calls down in Sawatch and even a little further south. Now they have a true search and rescue team, so they're kind of doing their own thing. But we'll still help them out, of course, as needed. We've helped out Western and vice versa. So, and then on North End too, you know, we'll go up there. They're more Buena Vista and up around there. So they have more 14ers. Okay. Between the two of us, we've got some of the most 14ers amongst teams.
Yeah.
And, that's what keeps us busy. I mean, not to say there's not other calls, whether it's someone tripping on, some trails around Salida or a river incident. But those seem to be our focus, are the bigger mountains.
Yeah. And are they mostly, I mean, have you guys been super busy this winter? A lot of ski related stuff, or has it been pretty chill?
It's been a pretty quiet winter. Typically for us, it's pretty quiet. You know, you'll hear about incidents and luckily most people are able to self rescue. But of course there's always those few that we're out there. There was a snowmobile incident that we dealt with earlier. And then luckily we haven't had to go out to any avalanche rescues. So we train for it like we're ready at any moment.
That's amazing. And then during the summer, same stuff. Usually for hikers getting lost on 14ers or getting altitude sickness, things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Getting lost, being unprepared is a really big one. You know, you get a lot of people who they hear about their friends wanting to do a 14er and they know nothing about it except, okay, cool. I'll look at some videos and I got this, you know, go out with a small little bottle of water and no nutrition.
Winging it, baby.
Find themselves in a lot of trouble. Yeah.
Do you, this might be a little bit of a loaded question, especially related to runners. Have you come across any runners or is it more so just, you know, somebody from no offense to Denver people, but like, you know, like somebody out from Denver from the day, you know, trying to get up their first 14er, is it more, or have you come across any runners with issues and stuff like that are, you know, kind of overdid it, you know, had a little too much fitness for the day and just kind of went wild with it?
personally only come across one runner. He was a runner slash hiker and unfortunately had a fatal fall.
Jesus Christ. Oh, yeah. Wow.
But I have heard stories of some Nolan's attempt runners who during training are either just exhausted or have gotten way too lost and have needed some help.
Wow.
But yeah, luckily just the one.
All right, I'm gonna bring this up a little bit, make it a little happier of a podcast.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm gonna pivot from sorry a little bit.
Sure.
And I think we hit a lot of the important things I wanted to talk about, and we can kind of go into more if you want to later on. But I want to talk more about you, dude. You're one of the things I love about this podcast is yes, we have our interviews with the professional athletes, we have our interviews with those up and coming athletes, but one of the things I love to talk to is people that are a big part of the community. And I feel like you are such a huge part of the Salida community. You know, between what you do with the running store, between what you do with search and rescue, like you're pretty fundamental for that world, you know? So let's talk a little bit about your background in what you're doing with the running store right now.
Sure. Yeah. So I work at 7,000 Feet Running Company. Big shout out to you guys. So yeah, I get people into properly fitted footwear so that they enjoy their lives that much more. I love that place. We also do a bunch of group runs out of there. So Monday nights, Wednesday nights, Friday mornings. So some of the times I'll lead our groups into the mountains and show them some trails, whether they know them by the back of their hand or they've never been on them before. And also as far as trails, I used to do a lot of work with Salida Mountain Trails, helping just maintain and even build trail. And that was fun. Just started finding out it was taking up a little too much of my time mixing that with search and rescue. But yeah, I just, you know, I really enjoy recreating in the outdoors and I want to show other people how to do it safely and experience it with them. So that means hanging out with a lot of people on trails and having fun.
Hell yeah, dude. And you're also with Salida Mountain Sports, correct?
With Salida Mountain Sports as well.
Yes. Sweet. So that gets me to my next question. You're really, one of the things I really admire about you is you're just a year-round athlete. You know, we were talking today on a run about splitboarding, about skiing, about running, like all of these different, you know, modalities in the mountains. What do you like the most? Like, what's your favorite? Do you like running better than skiing? Or?
Oh, you can't ask me that one. I don't know the answer. You know, I guess I really love it all. I love to run, love to mountain bike, love to rock climb, splitboard, now skiing, snowboarding. Gosh, the list goes on. I'll probably love something new within a week if you want to introduce me to it. I don't know. It's all fun. And I think all the sports kind of work together.
Yeah.
Train for one is helping train for another. And, you know, in the summer, in the heat of summer, I might start thinking about snowboarding and splitboarding. And then middle of winter, all of a sudden, start thinking about running. Kind of beautiful thing, though, with where we both live is we have access to dry trails in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Or a couple hours drive or even less, and we're in snowy mountains. So do I have a favorite? No. But I want to do them all.
I love it. One of the things that I find very interesting about you is that you don't race, but you are the best pacer that I have ever come. You've got inspirational quotes. You're calm. You're constantly checking on nutrition. Like, dude, is this like the more of the SAR guy that how are you such a good pacer? Cause like, all right, so I'm going to preface this, people. So Evan, this is the second part. And Patrick, if you're out there listening, this is, I'm sure you will be. So me and Patrick and Evan, me and Evan paced Patrick, the Ouray 100 this year. And I just was like astounded by how good of a pacer you were and just how calm and relaxed and like, just chill you were, but like still like on top of things. I am none of those things. So where does this come from?
Great question. So first of all, I have raced and I actually used to be a race coach.
What?
But that was on the snowboarding side of things. Yeah, okay. For slalom and GS. Spent a good amount of years coaching.
Dude, we got to get into this. Let's unpack this.
Okay, this is something, we can talk about. As far as where that comes from with pacing, I think a lot of it probably does come from SAR. But also, I don't know, I kind of feel like I have this natural drive to want to help and to see people succeed and reach their goals. And I try and kind of figure out what would I need or what does it look like they need? And just go with that. Like I feel like I kind of read off people's emotions a little bit. And, I think that'll also help along the way. Of course, that's hard when they're in the middle of a giant ultra and, you know, I mean, they're delirious and just trying to figure out what's going on. But yeah, I just enjoy seeing them succeed and trying to help them, you know, be the best that they can be.
Dude, I love it. Like I said, I had the fortune of doing some of the last climb of the Europe 100 with you guys, before I bailed out and only to miss the best part of the entire race. anyway, dude, what? You raced a little bit. What did you race? And like, let's unpack this. Cause I always thought you were just not into it. Let's hear about this.
Oh, so I've done a few running races. I mean, shorter distance, you know, half marathon, and down from there. But yeah, the snowboarding side of things, I was a coach for Slalom and GS. And that was a little snowboard team on the East Coast, but we'd come out here every year to USASA Nationals. And, I loved coaching. I used to also instruct prior to that and just kind of worked my way into coaching. Myself, I raced a little bit, but not very much. Again, I think that was with wanting to see others
succeed.
Yeah. So I was actually just at the tail end of Nationals last weekend just to see some of the coaches that I had worked with in the past and some of the athletes and seeing that some of those athletes are now coaching themselves, which is pretty amazing.
That's crazy. I knew you had said, you'd alluded to me as well. Like we talked about snowboarding in the past and I just always thought you meant like you were referring to splitboarding and like, this is something you were just doing playing in the mountains. I had no idea that like it was this competitive past of yours. That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to keep it in the past. It's something that I really do think about doing again. If I lived in Summit County, I have a feeling I would kind of still be in that world.
Sending it.
Yeah, I think so. But out here, I moved more into the backcountry side of things. Got an opportunity to be a backcountry guide as well. And love that, you know.
Oh, dude, let's dive into that. Like, okay. What are we doing in the backcountry? Are you guiding to specific backcountry skiing or?
Splitboarding mostly, but okay. I've also had skiers as well. What I'm doing is more, it's intro courses and just kind of navigating avalanche terrain safely. So these are people that may have an ARE, but more than likely don't even have a rec one yet and are interested in going that direction, but they want to learn just some basics so they can go into it kind of prepared. And also so they can get an idea of what things feel like under their feet in the snow and what to expect.
That must be fun, dude.
I love it because it's spending time teaching more of a classroom style. Then we go over all the gear out in the field. You know, we'll do usually a small observation pit, just kind of show what that's going to look like in the future. And then here's how to stay safe.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to have to see you later as a search and rescue guy. I'd rather just ride with you out there.
Wow. So you really cover like the entire gamut, like everything from saving people to teaching people. So you're kind of on, you know, full circle there in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess so.
I never thought about that way. Yeah. That's cool. Dude, so let's take this back to the East Coast. I know you're a Florida boy in some ways. Where are you originally from?
So Florida, actually, I've never lived there.
It's just mom and dad.
My parents live there.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, New Jersey. Born and raised in northern New Jersey.
Really?
Yes. Can't you tell by this really strong Jersey accent?
Dude, my dad's from Jersey. He's from Wildwood. You ever been down there?
I have, yes.
Wild place, man.
Wildwood was, definitely a wild place. And younger years, we'd go down there and hang out and party.
Did you guys have like senior week or whatever when you were in Jersey? Because I know Pennsylvania, my mom had it. And like everybody really, I think it's like a rite of passage or something like that everybody does. I did high school in Florida, so we didn't get one, but
it was more of like after prom we would go down there and
get fucking wild.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so Jersey, I mean there's some skiing in Jersey a little bit. No, maybe. I know upstate New York there is. It got the Adirondacks and Catskills. It can't be too far.
Yeah, so the mountain I worked at with the team that I coached, our mountain was huge, 270 vertical feet.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could basically set gates from top to bottom and just lap that. And it was perfect. And our series was the Catskill Mountain Series. So a lot of New York, but also we'd go out to Pennsylvania as well. But yeah, being in Jersey, wasn't too many options. You know, the East Coast ice was pretty much just anywhere you went from New Jersey to New York, but Vermont, that was like the place to go.
Yeah. So. Oh, dude, I've never been to Vermont. I mean, I've played a lot in the Adirondacks. Have you ever done like Marcy or been up there at all or in the Adirondacks?
Marcy, no. I mean, I've been around the Adirondacks. Yeah. Yes.
So, sure. So much fun. Cool. Technical mountains, man. So different than what we've got. Very, very hard.
Very different. Yeah. Yeah. Like rocks and roots.
Yeah.
That's the place to be.
Oh, it's so painful. Yeah. Okay. So you grew up in Jersey and then was it just Jersey to Colorado?
It was Jersey to Colorado. Coming out here every year for nationals, every time I'd be like, darn, I got to go back home. You know, it just is what it is. I've also come out here a few times outside of that as well. But I always knew that this was going to be a place I was going to be in. It just, yeah, I just waited too long. But
yeah,
it was just Jersey to Colorado.
All right. So I'm going to, you're like an onion. I'm like peeling these layers back.
Go for it. You're like,
so let's, one of the things, I'll never forget this. So we were in the car with Patrick's dad, I think. And someone had asked you, this was at Ouray last year. And I thought I knew, I'm a pretty good read. Like I know a lot about people. And someone asked you like what you did for a living. And I just like kind of assumed what you were doing now was your answer. And I think you had given your past answer of what you did previously for a living. And I was just like, whoa. Okay. So can we get into that a little bit about the business you started and kind of like your background, like your technical background?
Sure. Yeah. So I used to be in graphic design and animation. That was college and after college. Worked in the news industry doing on-air graphics and then post-production for some TV shows. And from there, kind of moved into more of the engineering side of things and that worked its way into control systems. So smart homes, MTV cribs, basically. And I was first installing things in these humongous houses in Jersey, New York. And then from there, I got more into the programming side of it. So I would then figure out ways to make all these things work together. Like a client who wanted to drive their car in the garage and never have to back out. We've got a giant turntable. So once their car is on there and it's sensed and it's safe, they can just pull right out the front.
That's so cool.
Or how about 40 TVs in your house? Because why not?
And these are high-end people.
These are high-end people. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of celebrity clients and just others who have just more money than they know what to do with.
Do you want to dive into some of these celebrity clients? I'm curious. You had mentioned a few of them to me before, but I can't remember.
Yeah. You know, man, where to start? I guess so. Like Jay-Z and shit. Beyonce.
You met them? Like, did you get to like say hi?
No, unfortunately.
I was like, that's crazy.
There's their people.
Yeah, their handlers.
Work with. But like Alicia Keys and Swizz Beatz, they, you know, I'd see them a lot, and they were super sweet. They had bought Eddie Murphy's house and were kind of redoing it when they moved in there, and great people. Halle Berry, Chris Rock and his wife at the time.
Bro, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Patrick Ewing. That was a fun house to be in. All this oversized furniture. I felt like
he's a giant man.
Yeah. You ever see like Alice in Wonderland? Yeah. She's in this. That's what I felt like sitting on some of their custom furniture. And you know, these projects would take sometimes weeks or months. So I wouldn't say I got to know them very well, but I got to chat with plenty of people and spend time with them. Tracy Morgan, that dude is so sweet. I mean, he was the nicest guy.
That's
crazy.
You know, he's
like, how can I help you? And I was like, what? I'm here just to help you. And yeah. So, you know, there's not everyone was like that.
Yeah.
There's plenty of people where their privacy is key, and I get that. And not just their privacy, but they're just kind of living in their own little world. And you're not a part of it. So, you know, you get both sides of it.
Right. Wow. That is crazy. So how long did you have the business for?
So that wasn't my business. That was actually, I was working for a company. That's what allowed me to work remote.
Gotcha.
And live out here.
Yeah.
But come COVID, they were doing layoffs. That was based in New Jersey, just next to the GW Bridge there. And I was one of two remote workers. So, you know, easy to let go. So from there, I actually bought a web design business from a friend who was retiring. I knew a little bit of web, but not a ton. And I took that business and had a blast. Just learned with it a lot. Great clients, a lot of local clients. Really enjoyed the work because it allowed me to do both my graphic design side as well as my programming side. And that was good. But then I realized, you know, I don't think I want to work for myself. I know that's most people's dream.
I'm the opposite.
But here I am, you know, filling out my taxes and realizing, and my health insurance, which didn't exist. So, you know, little things like that just kind of made me feel like I kind of want to work for a company, at least for a while again. Yeah. So I sold that business and, had a few smaller gigs, but kind of moved into the running store and Salida Mountain Sports. And then in the winter, a little bit of guiding.
Dude, I love that you're doing in a lot of ways, like what you love. Like you love being outside. You love spending time out there and you love helping people. You're doing all of those things.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's very like self-realized human. You know, you don't meet a lot of people like that. A lot of people like hate their jobs and they're miserable and, you know, and that's okay. Like that's fine. But like, you're like the bright light I look toward. I'm like, man, like if I ever get sick of this corporate shit, like, you know, Evan's got it going on.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, it's interesting. Like for the longest time, everything was about how much money I can make and see where that goes and having things. And then I feel like I've changed a little bit where I'm comfortable. I still want money, of course, and I still want things, but more comfortable with realizing that there's things outside of that too.
Yeah.
I am looking to get back into,
I was going
to
ask you, know,
the tech world, really kind of focused around IT or programming and cybersecurity as well. But for now, this works. And, you know, then I started seeing a lot of people who are just so happy with having less, spending more time outside. You know, at first I didn't get that. And then now I kind of do. But at the same time, I want to find a balance, which is why I want to get back into the corporate world. But I want to have, you know, boundaries.
Go have your perks too.
Right? I want to have my perks, but I want to have boundaries there. Yeah. If they want me working 7 days a week, they're going to pay me a ton of money. It's not worth it to me.
Exactly. There's
a lot more to it than just that.
I feel the same. I'm trying to think of like what else I want to get into with you, man. There's so many things. I'm bouncing all over the place. So one of the things I admire about you, and I've just always wanted to ask you in a lot of ways, is you're always outside. You're always in the backcountry. You're always doing shit. You ever see any like weird shit? Like, I think I'm kind of like alluding to the little Bigfoot thing here, but like,
I was waiting for this.
I mean, that was more of a question for later, but like, I just was always kind of curious, especially because you're outside doing your thing all the time. So I'm like, you ever see any weird shit? Like what's going on out there?
Definitely have seen some weird shit. And actually through search and rescue have seen some weird shit. I'll tell you about this one mission we had where it's basically a man that was running through the woods naked for several days. And
was he on like acid or something? Like what's the deal?
Well, we were calling him Mushroom Guy.
Okay.
You know, when we came across him, I mean, his feet were all bloody and he could barely talk. Luckily we were able to get him out of there, airlifted out of there because he was in bad shape. But what we came to theorize, we don't know for sure if this is true or not. He may have been in a cult. And
really?
Some drugs, and this was him getting out of it and running away, or maybe even during something. There's a couple of things that are kind of leading us to believe that that's the case. But
dude, is there like a cult in Chaffee County or a cult?
Oh no, this wasn't in Chaffee County. This was.
I thought I was about to blow the lid off the story.
No, we'll just say it was a little closer towards maybe Crestone area.
Okay. That makes sense. Dude, I'm not going to get into it. It's funny. Like shout out to Isaac. My buddy just posted on Strava something about there being cults in Crestone. And I was like, what does that mean? I have to ask him.
There's actually, there's a series on it. What was it called? Mother Love, I think was the cult name.
Okay. Guys, don't sue me.
It's just really interesting. So I don't know if this guy has anything to do with that. It was just kind of based on some things that we were trying to put together. Definitely seen some weird things. We've had this other guy. We refer to him as the Crystal Hunter. This guy was absolutely high, got hurt out there, said he was hunting for crystals in a place where crystals would definitely not be found. And we really do think he was referring to crystal meth.
He could be. Are you familiar with the crystals on Shivano? Or I think it's Shivano.
Antero.
Antero. Okay.
Nope. Definitely not the case.
Two different things. Okay.
So definitely seen some things through there. And then, you know, you've always got these weird animal encounters that happen at times, though. Can't say I've run into Bigfoot.
What kind of animal encounters?
I had a bear charge me.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Just throw up your fists to try to throw down? Like, what'd you do?
Oh, I did everything wrong at the time. I didn't know what to do. This was right after also moving to Salida. I went for an evening run, and this bear stood up and then got down on all fours, started charging me. And so I'm like, oh, I'm just going to talk to this thing calmly, back away, look at it, and just keep backing away slowly.
Yeah.
And it kept doing that. It would stand up, get down, charge again. So I finally backed away far enough where I was kind of around a corner. I couldn't see it over my shoulder. I figured it can't see me. And that's probably the fastest I run. And I just kept looking over my shoulder. I just booked it. I was out of there. Shortly after that, I started researching about what to do. Yeah, I did it all wrong. Dude, I should have been
throwing things at it. Yep. Dude, people think I'm crazy when I'm like, because Rose and I always talk about, because I see bears all the time. I've seen plenty of them. Rose and the dogs have not run into a bear yet. So the dogs have not seen a bear yet in a lot of ways. So I'm always kind of, I get kind of nervous because they run together, you know? And I'm just like, well, if you see a bear, like, this is what you do. And I don't think she's going to do it. I think she's going to run in the opposite direction. know, and that's probably fine. Like, you know, I don't think the bear would charge her, but you never know.
That's just it. Like, I've come across many bears both out here and also on the East Coast. Not one has ever charged. They've always
that is crazy.
They just run away or they keep eating their garbage, whatever it is. This one, yeah, I didn't see any cubs, but who knows what it was.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. I bumped into one. Dude, I got from like me to you. I ran up and I run with earphones in all the time. I almost ran into the bear had his back turned and I almost ran into him. Up in Palmer Lake. And he looked at me. I looked at him. He just took off the opposite direction. That could have ended really bad. So
Yeah, that could have.
Yeah. Could have fought. Could have gotten ugly. what's your take on Colorado grizzly bears?
I don't know. I mean, I've heard that there's a chance, but I'm still unsure.
The reason I ask is because not too far from you, there was a fairly credible sighting off of Independence Pass within the last 2 decades. And then there's sightings, quote unquote sightings in the San Juans all the time. People talk about, they say they see things. So sure. I'm just curious. I don't know.
I have seen a black bear that was quite brown. I don't know if people are thinking that could be a grizzly.
Could
be
very common.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, you know, there's a lot of traits that are different between the two, but just a quick glance, you know, just looking at the color, there's a chance. I don't know. You know, there's definitely a lot of stuff. We don't know what's out there. Yeah. So
now I was kind of curious because I know like in, you know, people talk. I wasn't sure, like you're not far from the San Juans in that area. So I was always kind of, you know. Curious to see if you've run into any.
No, haven't.
Interesting. All right. What's your take on the aliens?
Should we talk about Crestone again?
Fuck yeah.
No, just kidding.
Dude, I had Jackson Cole on a few weeks ago, and Jackson Cole used to live in Alamosa, and he brought up the horse that was like had like its brains like lasered out. Or some crazy shit. I forget what he called it. There's like some special name for it. I saw it on the History Channel too. But yeah, there's some weird shit going on there.
Well, I mean, if you drive down there, there's plenty of places where you supposedly can see aliens. Yeah. I don't believe in aliens.
What?
But I've definitely seen some things in the night sky. But yeah, I want to, but I don't.
All right, this is a two-parter. Have you seen? Let's talk about what you've seen in the night sky. What have you seen?
You know, I think here's going to be the science side of me. What I think are either just weird optics going on where things look like they could be moving around in there, but they're not really. It's just kind of light distortions.
You're a very practical person.
I try to be. Whether it's right or not, I don't know. I could very well be aliens. I don't know. But yeah, I don't believe in them myself.
All right, let's dive into that. Like, as far as, I'm not going to press you too hard, but I'm just kind of curious to unpack this. Like all the crazy aerial phenomenons that people see and shit like that. Do you think it's more, could it just be us? Do you think it's like the government, like something like that? Or do you think, you don't think it could be like some guys flying around in there?
I think a lot of it can be explained, but I think also when a lot of people are trying to show photos or video footage, you know, there's a lot that happens between the camera sensor and what's actually happening out there. But I do think there's also definitely some aircraft that, you know, could be mistaken, especially, you know, here, Springs area. There's, you know, a lot going on where there could be test aircraft that just are not known to people.
Yeah, or classified stuff.
Yeah. Classified stuff, yeah. Who knows?
You know what? The thing is too, I find you'd be very practical. And the reason I say that is because, like, I'm sure you're always, especially with SAR, I think that's a good place to put it. You deal with people that have high stress situations. So like the way someone would describe like an event or the way something happens is sometimes not exactly the way it actually unfolded in reality, because it's how their brain is perceiving it.
Totally.
And I think when people panic, or when they think they, like, dude, all right, great example. Shout out to my mom. She sent me, she's fucking freaking out. This is in South Florida, sending me these photos of this. Dude, you ever see like the photos of the Starlink satellites?
Yes.
And like, she's like, oh my God, we're seeing UFOs. Like, this is straight up aliens. I'm like, Mom, that's a Starlink satellite. Like, relax over there. So it's interesting to see where people's brains kind of go and, you know, how we perceive reality versus what reality actually is.
Totally. I mean, there's a lot going on in our lives that can change something we see all the time. And now it's all of a sudden something we can't explain.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So I like to, I mean, this is a sub-ultra podcast. This might be a tough question to answer, but I like to kind of get into some things running related in a lot of ways. So, and you might not be able to ask or answer too many of these. I'm not really sure. So I'm going to press you on them. We'll see where we get here.
Okay.
So the first thing is, I'll give you an easy one. What is, like, what other sports outside of mountain sports do you draw like excitement from, like adjacent sports? Like, could be the NBA, could be UFC, could be underwater basket weaving. Like, what kind of sports do you like outside of mountain sports?
Definitely underwater basket weaving. you know, scuba diving, that was a big part of my life, something I really enjoyed. Don't really get to do that as much right now. Mountain sports, outside of mountain sports, that's a tough.
Did you watch sports at all? Are you like an NBA guy, like an NFL guy? You watch any of that? Like,
you know, I'm not football? Regularly.
Okay.
But if I'm at a game or friends have on a game, I'll get all into it. Like, yeah. You know, but I have family members that they are diehard, have to watch every football game or every basketball game. And it's like, okay, you know, that's cool. Can watch it, take it or leave it. I'd love to play those sports.
Yeah.
You know, I want to play any sport that's out there just because it's something to do and it's fun.
I'm a fan of competition. Yeah.
I mean, and even without the competitive side of it, just moving your body and having fun with it, throwing a baseball, frisbee, playing pool, whatever. So yeah, I'm a fan of kind of any sport.
Are you competitive?
I am. I think I'm more competitive with myself than with others.
Okay.
Yeah, I will try and push myself. But yeah, I am competitive.
Can you unpack that a little bit? Like, so
sure.
In the sense where on Strava, I know this is a hot.
Let's talk about this. Yeah.
So like when you were on Strava, were you like tracking PRs and stuff like that? Like trying, like, because the way I will be is a little bit less with other people, although I do like to throw down, but I also like to see how I can improve at something. Like the incline is the best example. How can I whittle this down until I can get the absolute fucking best out of myself? Is that kind of the same concept?
I think, but probably not to the same extent. I would. Yeah, especially on Strava. So I'm taking a little break from Strava at the moment. I definitely suffer from a bit of FOMO, and seeing stuff on there, you know, people doing all these activities while I've had some injuries has been a little rough for me. So that kind of steered me away from Strava for a little while. Hopefully once everything gets settled, you know, I'll be back on there. But yeah, watching someone or seeing someone do something great, and it's like, oh, wait, I want to try that. Maybe I can best that. I'm not going to do it, you know, like where it's going to kind of do it to defeat them, but just because there's a new challenge that I'm going to give myself based on what they're doing. So that's kind of what I mean with, like, you know, I would be competitive to myself. Can I beat that? And then I would push it against my own self of, okay, well, now I'm here. How can I beat that? So yeah, I guess it would kind of what you were saying, whittling it down and how to get better and better at it.
I love that. Interesting on the Strava thought. And I want to just put it out there. Like, I really admire that. Like, I have a private Strava. And obviously, we talked about a little, like, my differences for having a private Strava are different than you just not being on Strava. Like, for instance, like, so for me, my reason to not be on, like, to have a private Strava is just because, like, I don't know. I hate when people are all up in my shit looking at my workouts. I just don't like that. I don't know. I keep it private. It's something special to me. Something that, you know, is only for me. And I think Brian Whitfield, who I had on the pod a little bit earlier in a previous episode, he kind of said something very similar where he just likes it. His training is for him, you know. I like that philosophy. Okay, so running related. Now, I know this is a Sub-Ultra podcast, but I'm going to leave this open-ended just because I know this is the people different look at the sport differently. So I'm just going to ask you, like, what is your running goat? Who is your running goat? Male or female, or male and female? I know it's a difficult one to answer, but
I think my running goat is Killian.
Really?
I think so. Just watching what that guy can do and just how smooth he moves through the mountains and fast and effortless, and not just with running. I mean, his just backcountry pursuits is just, it's amazing. He's a huge inspiration. And you know, that's something that I strive to kind of be, just effortless moving through the mountains the way that guy does. It's incredible.
I love that. I think that's the reason why. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people on the podcast now, and different people have different reasons for why they like moving in the mountains. Some people it's spiritual and it's their expression. Other people it's competitive. And I think that, I don't know. I think for me, it's a mixture of both. Like, I love that expression. And I think one of the most beautiful things is being able to move in the mountains the way you want to, not the way.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that might be mine as well, is that it's a combination.
Yeah.
You know, spiritual, physical, it's something that's, we're pushing ourselves and gaining more ground, seeing more things. Yeah, it's a whole bunch of things. It's
fucking great, isn't it?
It is.
Killian, man. I you know, I would agree with you. I'm like in this like renaissance of my own breakdown of like the way I define GOAT, just because I take that term very seriously. And I think it's a difficult conversation to have. And I think it's such an ambiguous conversation because there's no right answer. In a lot of ways, I think Killian is one of the few people that have transcended the sport, where it's like, just like Courtney, right? Courtney's been on Rogan. Yep. Courtney's just above it at this point, you know, where she could retire tomorrow and everybody knows that that's the literally greatest of all time. And I think Killian in certain aspects, yes, his range, dude, that range, he could run 100 miles at Hard Rock and go set the course record with a dislocated shoulder.
Yeah.
And then he can go win Zagama or a series of now. That's kind of crazy to think that people can do that. And he, like I said, like transcending the sport too with his company. I would definitely agree with where that shoe, those shoes are pretty cool.
Normals. Yeah.
I can't name either of them. I called it a carriage jig. What the hell did you call it?
Shrag and Tamir.
What the fuck? Yeah, I can't. Dude, what shoes have you been running in lately? What do you got there?
What's you on know, your I've been in a few different shoes. So right now, earlier today, I was in some Merrells. Thank you, Reed. Reed has helped me out with getting those shoes. Love my Hokas. Mafates, they're awesome shoe. And then Nike. Nike has been a brand that I'm new to and I'm absolutely loving. Ultraflies and Zagama. That shoe is just an amazing shoe. I can't wait. Something will be changing in the next version that's going to be pretty amazing.
That's exciting, man. I know. I think it's kind of really neat, like being, you know, working at the store to be able to see all the new, like what all the brands are putting out there and getting to see like all the new models and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have some VJs as well, just getting to test a bunch of different shoes. And, you know, it's really important that we do that so we can talk to the customers and figure out what's going to work for what they're looking for. And, it's a nice perk at the same time.
Fuck yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm a little biased. I think we'll make you a Sportiva guy one way or another. Don't you worry.
Oh, I'd love to try them. I mean, my rock climbing shoes, my mountaineering boots, my approach shoes, you know, they're all Sportiva. So
you turned me on to approach shoes after we, after that vicious day that we had on Broken Hand Peak. I started using approach shoes for certain things. Anything like Class 3, Class 4. I'm kind of spoiled now with Sportiva because everything's got really sticky rubber and it's perfect. But before then, I wasn't going up into Hoka Tectons anymore.
That was an interesting shoe choice for that day.
It was a really bad one.
But you made it happen. You made that work.
That was a rough day, dude. There was high consequence that day. That was really fun.
That was fun. And yeah, that little bit of snow in there really changed things.
Yeah, it was. We got to go back and do that again.
Yes.
Less anxiety.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Dude, do you have anything to add?
No.
No?
No, I know. I'm thinking about
any shout outs? Well, I know you're less of a social media guy, but we can plug your social media. Gets you some followers if you'd like that. Maybe not. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, I love sharing things on social media, you know, just playing out in the mountains. So if you
How about this? Because one thing I do want to add to, I know you had said that there's the recruitment right now for SAR is a little bit different. It's not, but one of the things I'd like to maybe plug is how people can either donate and contribute to you guys, or if they're interested in potentially, if they're in that area, or, and I'll plug El Paso County Search and Rescue as well, because we have a lot of Colorado Springs people that might be interested in search and rescue for El Paso County. So I'll kind of plug those things as well. So,
cool. Yeah. Thank you. That's when I probably should have filled in there. So yeah, for us, it's chafysarsouth.org. You know, we pretty much just live off of donations, and we'll apply for grants as well. And then a big one that kind of covers all of Colorado is getting a CoreSAR card. It's not insurance. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, how do I get my search and rescue insurance card? No, search and rescue does not charge. Everything we do for free. I can't say the same for if you're in a ambulance or certain helicopters. You know, that's on them, because that's on the medical side of what they have to do. But we don't charge for anything. So a CoreSAR card is great. You know, it just kind of helps if we're out there on a rescue and we damage some of our equipment because we're using our own gear. You know, we purchase our own backpacks, jackets, whatever. And if it gets torn up or lost or whatever the case may be, and you have that card, we can at least apply to hopefully get that covered and get ourselves some new gear so we can get back out there.
Dude, I did not know that. I always thought it was like insurance. Like, that's kind of the reason I originally got mine was, again, pacing for, I think it was pacing for High Lonesome. They require you to have one as a pacer.
Which is great.
Yeah, I love
Caleb
that.
Caleb and Kelsey, thank you guys so much. I mean, you do a lot for the sport, and especially with search and rescue. Yeah, it's a great requirement.
Yeah. Dude, actually, any race directors out there listening, yes, if you have a race over 50 miles and you have pacers, should require, or even entrance should be required to, you know, in case you got to get rescued.
Yeah, it's, what is it? $3?
It's like $3, dude. Yeah, absolutely. I did not know though. I always thought it was like an insurance kind of thing. I didn't know that it covered, or helped cover your guys' equipment and stuff like that. That's huge.
It's a really common misconception. A lot of people, you know, that's kind of what it looks like. Oh yeah, I need this card. No, I mean, we're going to be there for you regardless.
Now you'll turn around and leave.
Yeah. It's really just, you know, kind of like a way of thanking us to be able to resupply ourselves should we damage anything while rescuing you.
Okay. Dude, thank you. All right. You. What's your Instagram?
Ev Snapshot, EV Snapshot.
Dude, thank you for being on the pod.
Thank you.
What'd you guys think? I told you Evan was a good dude, and what a fun episode. All that search and rescue stuff is really interesting to dive into. I think it was really important to have him on the episode, really to raise awareness and to dive a little bit more into what search and rescue does, and to just kind of really thank those that are out there saving us when we're doing dumb shit in the mountains. special shout out to Evan. Really appreciative for having him on. What a good dude. Last but not least, I want to do some plugs. You can find him on Instagram. You can go ahead and look him up, Evan Paul. You can also, one of the things we did talk about was, if you guys are interested in volunteering or if you guys are interested in donating, search and rescue specifically works off of donations. If you are in the area, or if you're just interested in supporting a local organization, ChaffeeCountySouth.org is the search and rescue, address that you guys can, check it out on the World Wide Web. you can, go ahead and Google that and throw some donations that way. And last but not least, one of the cool things some races do, but I'm not sure a lot of people know what it is get a COSAR card. If you guys are planning getting in the backcountry this summer, COSAR card is a great thing to have. It's only $3. And like Evan said, it's a great opportunity, because if you are rescued from someone in search and rescue, if they damage or lose equipment, having that COSAR card gives them the ability to, get that equipment reimbursed for. So pretty cool. Good stuff. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this one. Until next time, the Steep Stuff Pod.